I'm like, did you change scissors in it? Did anything change? And he's like, no, it should be good to go. And I shot it for a long time, other than when that happened to Anthony, and then it happened. And I was like, oh, you must have hit it. Like, you had to have, like, bumped it or something, you know? Huh. And he's like, no, I swear I didn't. And I was like, yeah, that's weird. And then last night,
oh, man.
Yeah, it splintered my limb, so one limb's got a great big chip in it. Mm. It's a bad deal.
Hey, not Dennis, good.
Norris.
Norris.
Nice Joe, to meet you. Norris. Nice to meet you, Norris. Man.
You be around all day?
I'm gonna be yeah, like this they're gonna show us whatever.
Oh yeah, right on.
But then I'm gonna cook.
Oh, you're gonna cook too? Oh, you're cooking? Hey, what are you cooking today?
Ooh.
No.
Axis steer? You still have some? You need more.
No.
Omar bought some.
Oh, he did?
And then I got the pokey. My friend just came yesterday and bought me some fish.
Omar's usually more stingy, isn't he? Or does he bring meat in?
It may or may not nice be access to you.
Guys, nice to meet
nice
you
meet
too.
You too.
You guys are two legends. Hey, let me take a picture of this, can I?
Yeah, you can. Yeah, sure.
Bro,
you can take a photo.
Yeah.
Here we can. I can get out over there.
Yeah.
We'll just stay.
We'll sit down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sit down, Brady, so you same height as me.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Good seeing you, Norris.
12, you guys on that?
Yeah. 12, yeah.
Yeah.
12:15, yeah.
Yeah, we'll be right in that window.
Okay.
Thanks, Norris. See you, bud.
Have you guys met Norris before?
No.
It's the first time.
First time.
Yeah, yeah. nicest guy ever.
Norris is great.
Seems like it.
Yeah, yeah, Norris used to come in and hang around the showroom, right? And he'd visit with Paul and spend time and hang out. And then eventually I just worked himself into a job, I guess.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Is he from the islands?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he grew up, spent some time on Molokai, and then I don't know where else he's lived. But it's funny, we just went down there and he was like, oh, where are you hunting? And who are you hunting with? And he knew everybody. I mean, it's, yeah. I guess there's only like 6,500 people that live on Molokai.
Really?
Wow. And he is a lot. There's not a lot, I guess, but there is quite a few people from over there that come to Vegas and then they stop in here, and like somehow he has a connection with all of them. He knows someone that knows them and like gets along with them.
Hawaiians like Vegas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They do.
Whenever he's here though, he's always making food for everybody. He does pokey bowls.
He's a really good cook.
Axis deer. He does tacos and burritos. And last time we had stir fry, I think he has this little cart. So he's built out this little cart, you know, you would like pick orders with, and he's got like a hot plate on it, and he's got everything like laid out on it, cutting board, the whole nine. So he just like pushes this little cart around wherever he wants, and he does food for everybody.
You know what that's called? That's job security.
Job security. Yes.
That's what that's called.
It. Yeah, he does so well. We had people come up to us at TAC, and they were like, hey, we stopped in our office, and we met this guy, Norris, and they always have good things to say about Norris.
Yeah, one guy said he was going to bring a bunch of like fish from Alaska to Norris because they were talking about fish and cooking fish. And he's like, I'm going to bring Norris a bunch of fish.
Yeah, funny guy. Nice guy, too.
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
So always check came on the right day.
Yes, we did.
Yeah. You got one of those in your office?
No.
A resident Hawaiian that cooks?
Yeah, I'm going to have to start looking, put the feelers out.
Our guys are too young.
Yeah, they're going to Smashburger and places like that.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, I was on social media. Last night I was laying in bed looking at it, and it was pretty interesting. Just Gen Alpha, right? Is this the new generation?
Oh,
and what is it called?
Alpha, I guess. Yeah, they were started over, right? We went through all the numbers, but the letters. But it was interesting because it was a post of like what they wanted to be, like do for a living, and like the top five were all like YouTube streamer, gamer. It's very different.
Yeah,
wow. Very different.
Very different.
Very different
thing. When I went to school, it was like you could be a policeman, a firefighter,
doctor,
a doctor, you know, nurse, whatever, dentist. So yeah, it's definitely changed.
Times have changed.
Yeah. Well, thanks for coming down. We appreciate it. We discussed earlier, you guys got up bright and early, huh?
Yeah,
it's early morning. It's a good morning though.
Are you guys early risers anyway?
Yeah.
Normally? What time you get out of bed normally?
Mine's usually between 5:30.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Same?
I'm usually 4:35.
Gym in the morning kind of guys?
I'm not.
Doing something.
Yeah, in the morning? Yep. Straight out of bed?
I've got a little home gym there, and it's very, very, very primitive. But
are we talking like rocks? Or what?
You never know from day to day.
Cement
blocks? I get out there and do something. So, yeah.
That's good.
Some days more than others.
You must be an evening guy, evening gym guy.
I'm a early evening guy. Okay. Yeah, mornings typically I get up, hang with my wife. That's kind of our time. Figured that recipe out probably 20 years ago.
Yeah.
I'm just stuck with it.
Yeah.
I've been married for 25 and I haven't figured that one out yet.
Yeah, me neither.
That's a good one.
That's why I'm hanging out with him.
Me neither. Yeah, me neither. My wife teaches fifth grade and she goes back to school next week. Mm. And I was thinking, man, that happened.
Stressful.
Yeah, that happened quick.
Yeah, summer's over.
Through summer. And yeah, I have an antelope tag starts Friday.
Nice.
So I can't hardly believe I just did a podcast yesterday for my own podcast called You're Not Ready. And basically I did it for myself because I went down through the list of all the things I'm not ready. And I was like, I can't be the only one. There's got to be other people that aren't ready either. But
it does always feel like it sneaks up every single year.
You want to be here, but then you wish you had maybe a week more to prepare work stuff and stuff for the hunt.
I thought I was the only one that happened to. I'm like a known procrastinator, so I figured this was just me. But it happens to you guys too?
Every year.
Yeah.
Just every year.
Sneaks up on you.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah. Every year I think I'm going to be out ahead of it. I'm going to be prepared and I can't get ahead of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My anxiety level goes sky high a couple of days before I leave.
Yeah.
And I'm not fun to be around. That's my life.
Yeah. So we should do some introductions, I guess. We got Joe and Dennis from Initial Ascent. You guys make backpacks. You make gear. Do you make any other gear?
Well, we do have an EDC now. It's a little bit crossover, but yeah, all gear.
All gear and backpacks. So we want to talk backpacks today, obviously. And then we've had you guys on before. Yeah. So it's good. Got to kind of run through your backpacks. I want to run through, you know, your systems and anything new that you might want to talk about. But then I thought it'd be fun just to like get to know you guys a little bit better, find out about your favorite hunts or, you know, pack nasty pack outs, anything like that. But hopefully you're okay with that.
Oh, heck yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Promos. We got to hit promos. We didn't even set a clock.
No, the timer going.
I always check the clock.
This is going to be like a 6-hour podcast.
This is the point of the podcast where I always check the clock to be like, how far am I? I'm rambling. So promo. Yeah, you guys can use the promo code podcast. Right now we have a refer a friend promo going on. If you refer one friend, you're going to get 75 points back in the Go Hunt Gear Shop, which is $75 that you can use towards the purchase of any gear that you want in the shop. You can actually refer up to three friends and get 75 points back. But the real kicker is if you refer four friends, new insiders that sign up with the promo code podcast, we're going to give you $1,000 back in the Go Hunt Gear Shop.
Nice.
Which is a lot of money.
Yeah, that's a lot of money. Amount of money.
A lot of money. Every time we do this promo, and if Lorenzo's around, he's always like, what? Really? Thousands?
Yeah, like, this thought this idea.
But,
wait, did we talk about that?
Yeah, did we talk about it? Did we clear that? But yeah, 1,000 points back in the gear shop if you refer and sign up for new insiders that are buddies of yours. So now's a great time to sign up. SIG. So shout out to SIG as a sponsor of the podcast. We spent some time shooting with those guys last week, which is a ton of fun.
Yeah. Blast hanging out with those guys.
Yeah. Those guys have always been awesome to support us and support the podcast. I always feel bad cause I feel like I don't do them complete justice. So hopefully I'll make up for it as we go, but,
keep me talking about binos and rangefinders and I'll go the distance.
Yeah. That was part of my, You're Not Ready podcast was I was thinking it through. I'm like, man, when's the last time I put a new battery in my, my Zulu sixes, you know, because they're
right now.
Yep.
Yeah. And then
rangefinder battery when you get home. Yeah. That's always the one that gets me.
New rangefinder battery.
Yeah. Cause I don't know how long it's been sitting in my bino harness, maybe compressed, leaning up against something you never know.
Yeah. I mean, I always try to do it. I'm really pretty good about it because is mostly bow hunter. I mean, I feel like range, I guess as a rifle hunter too, right? Range is absolutely everything. Yeah. But really, really critical. But then the other thing is when we were at TAC, how many people did you have come through? At least two that I can think of. They're like, oh, my rangefinder bit the dust, you know, it's battery either died or the actual rangefinder itself. So
yeah.
Would you rather be out in the woods hunting and forgot your binos or forgot your rangefinder?
Oh man.
That's a tough
one. I just got a little bit panicked.
Yeah.
What about you guys?
I would say I would probably say binos because I'd rely on somebody else on that situation.
Yeah, I think I would much rather forget my rangefinder. I try to just ever since growing up, I didn't have a rangefinder when I was young.
Yeah.
And so my dad always said, you need to learn how to work without that.
Uh-huh.
And
you need to get a
feel for, you know, how far, you know, everything is. And so I would much rather have my binos so I could at least see the animal.
Is that for rifle or bow or both?
It's probably more important for one than the other. but I think for either one. So that's where I'm at.
I would say probably forget my binos.
Yeah, I can glass a little bit with my rangefinder, a little 7X magnification if I needed to.
And saying that, it kind of hurts my heart that I'm not more confident in estimating range.
I know. Yeah.
We did a little experiment at Up Attack, and so Troy and I were like, this next target, we're going to guess the yardage. You know, he and I. Everybody else was too chicken to play. Huh?
You were chicken. I didn't want to lose an arrow.
First one, I was like, stepped up, had a number in mind. I'm like, yeah, that looks about right. Felt pretty confident, so guessed for 74 yards and tend it. I was like, great.
Nice.
Awesome. I got it, you know?
Yeah, both of you guys did.
Yeah, both.
Wow. Yeah, great.
Yeah, like, yeah,
your guesses are within like
2 yards of each other.
Yard and a half, something.
Yeah, and then two targets later, we did the exact same thing, and it was like a fallow deer behind a log across like a little canyon. And I stepped up, and I was looking at it, and I'm thinking, yeah, that looks about 65. And completely sailed it. And he did the exact same thing. I think his guess was within 2 yards again of mine. And it didn't help my confidence level for estimating yardage. I was like, man, how could I get? And I guess it must just have to do with uphill, downhill, crossed a canyon, definitely, and then the size of the animal. Because the other one was like a bedded deer, right? Mm-hmm. And then this was just like this little fallow buck. But man, it didn't do good things for my confidence as far as guessing yardage. But you're pretty good at it.
Used to be.
Yeah. Is it a skill you feel like you either use it or lose it?
Yeah, I think I could pull it off. But, you know, when you start getting in different country, especially with a rifle, that's when I start getting messed up. You know, I'm looking across canyon, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's 550. And it's, you know, not.
It's fun to play that guessing game when you're in the mountains. But it's like, what is that range? And then you're all totally wrong. You're just like, ooh, it's a lot closer usually than I thought it was.
I do that all the time, though. I've got some range-finding binoculars. And, you know, when I'm just sitting there, you know, I'm constantly hitting it, trying to guess what that range is. Just practice, you know, and plus it kind of fills time too.
Yeah.
Do you feel like, I feel like rifle would be really hard.
It's really hard.
There's no way I could be within, I mean, it could be 100 yards. There's no chance that I could guess a rifle range.
Yeah. The one year when I was hunting antelope with Mike, he used to work with us back in the day. I was on a stalk getting ready to shoot it, pulled up my rangefinder. It like worked a little bit, but then the antelope moved and I went to click it again and then nothing. And I was like, oh my gosh. And I tried digging in my pack. And of course, my rangefinder batteries, my extra ones were in the truck. So I'm like frantically pulling it out, trying to like hold the rangefinder battery. Maybe it's not getting contact, rubbing it on it, trying to do everything I can.
Licking it.
Yeah, I did. Trying to do anything to
like get your 10 again.
It's like all I need is one range and to see the MOA value and I can shoot this antelope right now. Could not do it. And I was like, I don't know exactly what range this is anymore because the antelope moved. I don't trust that other one. And I just had to like walk back and I ended up killing that buck later in the day, luckily, but like so frustrated not having a rangefinder.
Antelope would be impossible because that country is so big.
So big. I was like, it looks super far. I'm not going to just going to dial something and
so big. Really
miss or spook it and send it on a private. So
yeah,
I'm gonna text him. Are you guys hot in here? Is it like
it's a little warm?
It's
a little
warm. Yeah. They turn the lights on and then no AC, and I'm like, holy smokes, this kid's gonna be hotter than hot. I'm gonna text him.
Especially all these gentlemen with all these brain power over here. Brains just radiating heat out.
Although
making cool products.
One caveat: when you do come to our place, come in the fall or the winter.
Yeah,
I would say because we have an air conditioner that's very loud in our front office / showroom / podcast / studio. And we have to shut the air off and we have our podcast at about like 2 p.m. In the afternoon. So when it's 100 outside, boy, it heats up really,
you guys
really
do quickly. Group sauna and a podcast.
I'm telling you, man. We had Zach Bowie in there.
Zach Bowie on there, man. He was
that
dying.
Dude. He's taking off.
You can visually see people getting like.
And then when we get up out of those leather chairs, you know, it's like clean up on aisle 6.
Leather too, huh?
Oh man.
How do you guys like doing the podcast?
It's so much fun.
It is fun.
Yeah, it's been good.
Yeah, give us a plug for your podcast. How long have you been going? Who have you had on recently?
Yes. We're on, what, 11 now?
We just released 9 today.
Okay.
Yeah, episode 9 today. It's called the Mountain Dude Podcast. And we've had, who have we had on?
So we've had Baronio on.
Yeah.
We've had Dirk on from Phelps.
Yep. That's good. Dirk's hilarious.
Yeah.
I was actually thinking about Dirk on the way down here
today. He was on our flight coming down.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
He's here?
Well, he was here for a little bit.
Okay.
And he was flying to Bozeman. They had a meat eater corporate meeting or something.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah, I was just randomly thinking about, I was going through some elk calls the other day, the little Mavericks, you know, which is my favorite call. And I was thinking about Dirk for some reason this morning.
Yeah, he's so fun.
Super funny guy.
We had a great episode with him. And then we had
Justin Kate Small.
Yep, Justin Kate Small.
You guys do in-person only or do you?
In-person only, yep.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
You just trying to catch people when they're in town? Or are you flying them in?
We're not quite to that level yet. But,
we're kind of begging to come out.
Yeah, we're begging, asking politely, you know. Home field advantage type thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
It just like having this conversation here versus, you know, over web, it's just not the same.
Yeah.
So
it's completely different, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot easier.
Or having it in an event where you've got all the background noise and all of that. We just wanted to have it right there, and we've got a lot of local people.
We do.
There.
It'll probably become a challenge as time goes on, right?
Yeah.
But yeah.
I think it's hopefully going to continue to grow like it is, and feedback's been good.
You do 1 week?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What day do you release?
Today, Tuesday.
Oh, right on. Yeah. You do YouTube as well? Do you just do? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep.
Nice.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's been a lot of fun. We take a little bit different approach than some, and I think every podcast is different in some aspects. Mm-hmm. You know, with different hosts and different characters and whatnot. And so Joe and I are usually on them together. We do have a host, Chris Young. He's been doing an amazing job.
Yeah.
And it's just been a lot of fun. We try to get it to around an hour or so.
Mm-hmm.
And but yeah, it's been great.
Yeah. So it's fun to have folks on that you don't get to talk to regularly. Just sit down and ask any question, kind of get to know them a little bit better. And yeah, it's fun.
One of the coolest ones we had on, just real quick, Dan Whitmus.
Mm-hmm.
You guys familiar with Dan?
I'm not.
So he's a guide. He's been a guide for, what, 40 years?
Yeah, a long time.
He told some stories on there.
Oh, man.
Talked about stabbing himself with a knife in the femur.
Stuck it in the femur.
In Alaska, in the backcountry.
Yeah.
And continuing to hunt. And having to sew himself back up, him and a client.
Oh, really? Sutured it.
Oh,
he would be a great one for you guys to have on.
Yeah, he would be.
Is he by himself?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
So he's a guide normally in Alaska, or is he guide a bunch
of guides all over. Yeah. So you guys in Alaska. He does this, his guide up there, I think he's the only one that has access to, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of acres, but they fly in and then it's a 60-mile float and they finish in the Arctic Ocean.
Dang.
And they're hunting sheep and grizz the whole way on that hunt. And it sounds like just an epic. But then he guides over in Africa.
Hmm.
He guides over, does a lot in Colorado, Texas. So, but yeah, he's one of those folks, to Dennis's point, that once you sit down and you start, he's not one that talks a lot about it.
Mm-hmm.
But once you get him down and actually start talking, you're like, holy cow, where's this guy been?
Yeah, those are the cool stories.
Oh, man. Unbelievable. So
yeah, 40 years, is that what you said? That's how long he's been. That's a long time to be.
Yeah, he's definitely
54.
Yeah, so he's been doing it since he was a kid.
Yeah,
and he would smoke probably any one of us here on the mountain. I mean, he is like when I called him when he was coming out to do the podcast the day before, I called him, he picks up the phone, I'm talking to him, and I could tell he's kind of breathing a little bit. I'm like, where you at, man? He's like, oh, I'm on the Stairmaster, I got 100 pounds on. Just talking.
What?
Yeah. Wow. On the Stairmaster.
Yeah. 100 pounds.
And he talks about, you know, his workout routine, and he works out, I mean,
3 to 4 hours a day.
Yeah. It's
whoa, wow.
It's, okay. But he does a lot of stuff. Just, he says, I like to stay in that orange. You know, I don't like to get my heart rate to red, but I like to stay in that orange, and it's just continually moving. So he says, I'll get 80, 90 pounds on the treadmill and go for 2 hours. but it's just getting his body ready and just keeping it tamed.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
When's the last time you did that, Brady? The last time I had 90 pounds on my back was last elk season. Maybe 80. Like, I only reserved like maybe 2 trips a year.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Are you guys hiking constantly during the week or?
I would say, yeah. Like this summer's been the worst. Like I'm in the worst shape I've been in, like admittedly, like for probably the last like 5 years. And it's just been like travel and busy and family and super hectic. And I just like have not put time and effort into it like I should. My diet's been garbage. So admittedly, I would say I'm still doing like a couple days a week, you know, I'll throw like 50 pounds in a pack and just go hike up a hill, or I'll hit the treadmill and do like 3 or 4 miles.
Yeah.
But not definitely not 80 or 90 for 2 hours.
No, not doing that.
That's crazy.
You guys run a lot too.
Yeah. I run every day pretty much.
Yeah. Brady's been running a lot lately. Brady got the running bug bad.
I do.
Yeah.
I do have it.
Is that Omar the cause of that?
A little bit, because I want to get into some of the stuff that he's doing. But then I tell my girlfriend that. She's like, I don't want to support you doing that. Like, I'll be there to support you, but, like, I don't want to have to be there to support you.
Okay.
So, like, yeah.
You got to listen to that a little bit.
Yeah. I think what happened is about a year ago, maybe June of last year, we went up to Cam's camp. He had Cam Haynes as the camp, you know. Mm-hmm. And the last day they did a trail run, which was like, 6 miles, something like that.
Yeah, it was a 10K.
Yeah, 10K. And I think it went up Pisgah and kind of topped out and then worked its way back. And I think prior to that, you were like, yeah, I don't know. You're kind of like, I run a little. But then you could, I remember running across the finish line and seeing you and being like, okay, this has changed for Brady. Like,
yeah,
Brady,
I was addicted after
Brady
that.
Really loved that.
Really?
Yeah, I had a blast.
Yeah.
I never raced either. So, like, I kind of enjoy the racing aspect. I'm a competitive guy.
Yeah.
So, like, I do enjoy that. So, yeah, I mean, I'm supposed to do a half marathon this year that I ended up canceling it because I like started to feel a little bit of weirdness in one of my like Achilles. And like the next week I was going to go to New Zealand. So I was like, what would I rather do? Go to New Zealand and be full or push my box? I would probably push myself on the half marathon.
Yeah.
But I was able to transfer my half marathon to 2026. And now I'm just going to upgrade right to a marathon. I'm like, why am I going to do a half when I can do a full? So I'm going to do a full next year.
There you go.
And then pacing Omar in the 100-mile.
Yeah.
He did 24 miles with him there.
Full marathon almost there.
Yeah. So like I'm addicted. Next year, I think this fall, if I can fit it in, I'm going to try to run rim to rim to rim in the Grand Canyon. So like 43 miles.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
That'd be
epic. I don't want to hike it. I mean, there'll probably be a lot of like hiking a little bit because I'm going to be exhausted. But like I want to try to run it and do it one day and get out.
Fun.
Start doing some of that crazy stuff and maybe sign up for some other ultras later, but
that's cool.
It's just fun.
Yeah.
Like you listen to podcasts and just zone out. And
you hit the Stairmaster. What's your preferred method of like getting ready for hunting season?
Oh, mine's always been, hiking 2-3 times a week, but I did buy this elliptical for my little primitive garage.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been on it quite a bit lately, and it's different. I don't particularly like it, but it's something different. So I don't know. That's what I've been doing lately. And I've been trying to once a week for the past, 4 or 5 weeks, I've been trying to do 100 pounds one time a week and just on flat ground, for right now.
For how long?
I usually go for about an hour.
Gotcha.
But just it's just like around the neighborhood, that sort of thing. Just trying to feel that again. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So,
with 100 pounds.
Yeah.
Do your neighbors look at you crazy?
Like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
They look at me crazy if I've got a pack on.
My neighborhood. Yeah. They're like, "What's that guy doing?"
Yeah. So.
Do your neighbors kind of know who you are and what you do? And they're like, oh, yeah.
No, we keep to ourselves.
Dennis. Really?
We do. Yeah, we see our neighbors next door maybe twice a year.
Yeah.
Or something.
That's kind of how sounds I am, like too. Me. Yeah, me too.
Just keep to myself.
Yeah.
I wave every now and then. That's probably the extent.
I'll wave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How are things going over there at Initial Ascent? How's the year been?
It's been good, man.
Is this what? How many years now?
So we launched in 2018. We started in 15, though, so you could technically say 10. But
10 years.
I know, isn't that crazy?
That's crazy. Yeah. That so is
we,
crazy.
We started selling the product 7 years ago.
Okay.
But it took 3 years on that frame. So, it's been one of those things where, we've had good growth every single year since we launched. But then we've had hyper growth here the last couple of years. And fortunately, we've made some good decisions on our supply chain, our manufacturing, things like that, that have put us in a position to kind of handle the scale.
Mm-hmm.
And we're continuing to build on that. So it's no complaints. We started actually doing, you guys may have seen it, we started a digital ad campaign, which we've done prior years, but the brand just wasn't significant enough, didn't have enough brand equity. And it just was not successful. But we started it around the 4th of July this year, and it's been insane.
Hmm.
So we feel like it's finally hitting that sweet spot, mm-hmm. and people are starting to get to know who we are a little bit.
Right.
Which is good.
Well, what's the video series? Is it Behind the Design, or what do you guys call that? So I was watching that one the other day where you guys were going through the frame, like when you were making fun of each other for the wine glass looking gone thing. Yeah, and you guys had all those old photos.
That was kind of our first podcast, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
Just sat down and Joe and I visited.
Talked about the frame.
Just reminisced about the frame. That was so much
I liked
much
how you
fun.
Threw in all, like, because I was watching it actually on YouTube, so I could, like, see all the visuals, and I like how you guys tossed all the visuals in there. I was like, dang, those are yarn. And then you guys started talking about, like, literally yarn designing the frame and trying to figure it out. And then, like, yeah, going through with that guy you had build the frames, like trying mm-hmm. to find the secret sauce to do it. And I thought it was really cool. Like, you know, giving you a backstory on, you know, why the frame is so great.
Yeah. It is crazy, man. You look back on it and, you know, we've learned now, but I mean, it is literally, we say often that it was like making a cake without a recipe. And it really was. And fortunately we had Kyle, who's our engineer that actually makes our frame for us today. The guy just had equal desire to figure this out. Mm-hmm. I think anybody else, any other company would have been like, I don't have time for this. But Kyle never gave up. Mm-hmm. And he's amazing. Absolutely amazing. So
do you hunt?
Nope.
Really?
He's a backpacker though.
Gotcha. Mm, yeah. Loves backpacking.
Loves backpacking. Mm-hmm. Loves his background. Obviously he teaches at BYU Rexburg.
Okay.
And I think he's the head engineer over there. And then he owns a composite company.
Mm-hmm.
But his real passion, I would say, is prototyping and then design, develop, and manufacture small scale. So we've definitely stretched him. And he since have moved into a bigger facility. But he's a heart of gold. He's been great.
That's good. Why? So I'm curious. I mean, initial ascent is, in my opinion, you'd have to live under a rock to not see that, you know, the brand and the pack. You're seeing it more and more. I'm seeing it more in social media and more people using it in the field. I was curious as to why you think people are switching to your packs. Like, what do you think the difference is? In your opinion, like, you've probably used other packs. I assume you probably did a bunch of R&D and looked at them, and like, what's the sales pitch?
Yeah, that was one of the things that, you know, both Joe and I, we owned a lot of packs, you know, for years. And we'd always talk about them and always talk about, you know, this pack and that pack. And, for me personally, I had a back issue. That was an underlying driver for me.
Mm-hmm.
But we just thought that we could do something better and different. And so our biggest thing is being able to carry heavy loads more comfortably than anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with working with Kyle, and just constantly tweaking and then, you know, working with guys that get out there and constantly get it done like a Dave Baronio, you know, hauling 35, 40 animals off every season with, you know, the outfitting business. You know, we've been able to achieve that. And, just always trying to figure out something different. But I mean, it goes from our frame to our shoulder harness to our lumbar support, you know, all of that just kind of adds into this secret sauce, I guess. Mm-hmm.
And I think back to your point too, is just, there's an evolution of a product, right? Life cycle. And, you know, we sat down here, I think we follow kind of the natural bell curve, if you will. But when we started having people like Dave, like Brian, like Brady, you know, Lampers. Now we got Staten, Phelps. I mean, mm-hmm. names that are really recognizable out there is credible. Because there's no lack of backpack options out there. Sure. I mean, there's yeah. none, right? Mm-hmm. And they all serve a purpose. And there's a lot of good packs out there. Mm-hmm. But I think when we started getting the credibility of people like that saying, you know what, this does carry heavy loads more comfortably. Mm-hmm. That's when it was kind of like that thing just went donk.
Right.
Made a huge difference.
You guys' packs aren't the lightest, I wouldn't say. You guys probably hear that, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. How do you gauge like the difference between like being heavy and light and the way that it carries? I mean, is that like is it a thought process for you? Are you trying to lighten the pack, or are you just like, I'm comfortable with where it's at based on the weight and the way that it carries?
I think we're always trying to make our pack better. You know, we're constantly, Joe and I are constantly talking about, I mean, the frame, it's money. It's, mm-hmm. it's,
you're happy with where it's at.
It's there. But at the same time, could it be better? And that's what we always ask ourselves. So we're constantly looking at different technologies, different materials, just different ways of doing things to accomplish the results that we're getting right now. Mm-hmm. With going about it a little bit different, and there's different things out there now, you know, materials and whatnot, and processes that we haven't even scratched the surface on, and I think that type of thing will allow us to get, you know, lighter mm-hmm. with the same performance. Yeah. So yeah, I think. We're always trying to achieve that, but I think there's a balance there for sure, mm-hmm. Between quality and something that's able to take the bumps and the bruises mm-hmm. and being light. So I think we kind of always went about it as we definitely don't want to be the heaviest. Mm-hmm. We want to be, you know, lighter than, you know, than most, mm-hmm. I guess. But we don't want to be the lightest mm-hmm. because we want to be able to withstand all that backcountry hunting throws at it and, mm-hmm. and its users.
Feels yeah. like you give up. You definitely give up some durability, right? And even comfort, I would say. Mm-hmm. So I mean, I had a discussion with a guy that was asking me questions the other day in my DMs. He had another pack, that's super lightweight pack, and was asking me if I'd use it. And I said, I've used it. And he was like, oh, it'd be so nice if this pack weighed this much, you know, and I said, yeah, I get it, you know, and he was asking, oh, the pack that you use, it's heavier, right? And I'm like, yeah, it is heavier, but I'm okay with that. I'm okay mm-hmm. with it being heavier. Like, I think I've done both. Like, I've chased super lightweight. I do the same thing with arrows, right? Like, right now yeah. we're having a resurgence of like chasing this lightweight, super fast arrow. Had a conversation with a guy up at TAC, and he's like, would you shoot this arrow at an elk? And I'm like, yeah, you could, but reality is like, you're giving up something, right? Like there's more flex, there's less penetration. Like, it's just not as durable. A heavier arrow is just durable, more durable, right? Not ultra heavy, but heavier. I feel the same way about packs. I've never used like a really super ultra lightweight pack that I felt like I had the durability and then just comfort. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, if you're going to be living with that thing on your back day in and day out, I'm kind of okay with packing a little bit of extra weight if it rides better.
You know? The amount of repairs you have to do too in an ultra light backpack. Like yeah. Homebrew repair, sewing things, like that's a pain in the butt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that kind of goes back to those podcasts I was listening to of you guys here recently, and you were talking about the Uberlight sleeping
yeah.
pad.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great pad. Super
all of a sudden,
light.
We got too light.
Too light, yeah. Right? Yeah, not durable. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, if that thing goes flat on you,
or just blows up like a balloon, and you have to sleep like you're in a reclining chair because the baffles are yeah. gone. It's like, okay, yeah. that was not a good night's sleep for the rest of the week hunting.
Yeah, you have to have a good option. Mix. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
But I think to Dennis's point, I mean, we're still though evaluating, right?
All the
one
time.
Of the things we always said is we're never one going to be a me too, and two, we're not going to settle. So he and I are getting ready to go on a trip. We're going to continue to look at different manufacturers, but you know, we're going to go to a place that there's only five of them in the world that are doing this manufacturing. It's brand new. So we're getting on the plane. We're flying. We've been testing other materials within the frame as well. So we're not going to just settle. We're going to continue to say, okay, is there a way to do it better? But it's got to pass Baronio. It's got to pass Brady.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're constantly looking at new. Would you say that's like the next, you know, space for improvement is just materials, composites,
I think,
or?
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, when we launched the pack in 2018, the resin that we used within the frame actually wasn't being used in any frames in the U.S. I don't think there are, it is still to this day. But it wasn't even available until the year prior in the States. Leap today, right? That technology continues to evolve, right? So we feel like we've got to make these kind of trips, these kind of investments to make sure we're on the front edge of it. Because it does. It just changed so stinking fast.
So, has your design changed much since you launched?
No.
Really. Yeah, from the frame, not really. Like the meat and potatoes of the frame. You know, there's been, you know, maybe a layer here or a direction of carbon there.
But a couple slots here and there.
Yeah, a couple slots here for versatility. But for the most part, it's been pretty solid.
Yeah.
You know, as far as the same that we started out with.
How often are you looking at new? Are you constantly thinking about new stuff for it?
Constantly.
How far out are you, like, in trying to plan and prep? Like, are you a year, 2 years? Does it take that long?
Three. In some cases, yeah, 3 to 5, on some ideas that we're working through. Yeah.
That's a lot.
That's so hard.
What's the hardest part about it?
Waiting. Especially when you know you've got something good, there's a process that you have to go through, and that's been a hard part for us, because we know that this is going to do well. I mean, this is going to crush, but we got to wait, and we got to make sure, and we're always making sure that we've got the proper amount of testing and just taking it in all environments and all uses. And It's tough when you just have that gut feeling that you know this is going to work. And now we're coming up with some things where we're actually going to be able to put numbers to it, which is something nobody's ever been able to do before. And
what do you mean by numbers?
We'll be able to, you know, as far as strength of certain materials, we'll be able to actually measure within our system, and that will give us some definitive answers quicker, rather than having to spend an entire season, you know, packing out animals to try to determine how strong it is.
Something quantifiable.
Something quantifiable, something a little bit more scientific.
Yeah. Just the thing with backpacks, it's one of the most common questions you guys probably get. Me as well, like, how much can that thing pack?
Yep.
You're like, well, how much can you pack? You know what I mean? That's usually my answer. Yeah. And I'm like, I can't pack 100 very comfortably for very long, right? So, yeah, you always hear, 150. Like, you hear numbers thrown around, but I don't think that I've ever, have you ever seen anything that was, like, quantifiable? That, I mean, other than, like, guys will throw, cement bags in a pack and hang it from a forklift or something like that and say, oh, it made it, you know?
Destroyed. The cool thing about this too is when we were designing and developing it, I mean, it's truly a testing lab, but we wanted to make it mobile enough so that we could bring it to the show and we could do tests right there, like at the expo, and show people, hey, this is legit. This is where it's at. So that's going to be fun to be able to do that.
I have to let us borrow it so we can test other packs on it too, so we can give you guys some other comparison numbers. So we'll do that work for you.
How much testing is enough? Like, how many years do you give it? How many hunts do you give it? Because I would think, I mean, as we've kind of gone down the path with our own private label apparel, right?
That balance.
We can take it out on a hunt. We can hunt a year in it. Right. You know, I mean, does it get better? I don't know. You know, sometimes it just feels like, yeah, it's good enough for what works, right? But then you're constantly thinking in the back of your head. But how do you quantify that? Do you have a gut? Is it a gut feeling?
I mean, my opinion, I'm curious his too. We differ slightly. To your point, you can test and test and test, but there gets to a point, like our frame process today, most people don't know this. We make it in Rexburg, Idaho. It takes us over 4 hours to make one frame. So you do the math in today's times, how much that costs. That's a ton of cost. We could make it stronger, but is there a return off of that? Both from performance, right? You know, so we've opted, I mean, it took us 3.5 years to design the first frame. It's a long time, 14 generations. But there does get to that point where it's like a diminishing return. So we feel like we've bumped all the way to the wall. We haven't backed off of the wall. We've had a lot of people tell us we should, but we haven't. But we do think with some of these materials that we're testing, there's possibilities where we could maybe change the game again.
4 hours per frame.
Per frame.
You got to have a lot of parts.
A lot of molds.
Hmm. Wow. That makes planning, that must make your inventory and planning process an absolute nightmare, I would think.
It's called cracking a whip and and Joe constantly on the phone. Hey, you guys got to go. Add the other shift.
Yeah, it's been fun though. Yeah. That's a good pain. Yeah, that's a good problem to have.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And fortunately, I think we do a decent job forecasting, and we've always been able to stay in front of it. Dennis and I have always been of the mindset we're going to put it on the shelf, and we have the inventory. Like today, I mean, we got over 6 months' supply of inventory sitting on the shelf in our peak season. We could burn for another 6 months at this rate. Mm-hmm. So we just don't ever want to put ourselves in a position where a customer wants to order something and they can't get it.
Yeah.
That's the worst thing in the world.
Well, right? They're going to instantly go somewhere else. Yeah,
they'll go somewhere else. It's like you work so stinking hard to get your product, one, to a point where the brand's recognized, you know, and then you create the demand. Because we feel like it's 6 touch points before somebody actually pulls a trigger on a pack. You go through all that and it's like, oh, they don't have it. You know, so we just like, nope, we're going to just dump a ton of capital into this to make sure we got inventory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we had one time in our history where it was like mid August and we were out of stuff, but it wasn't our fault. It was, we just had, there were some other hiccups that caused that, but Joe kind of runs all of our forecasting for us and has done an absolute amazing job staying out ahead of this and looking, you know, in a growing business that's blowing up,
mm-hmm.
to be able to forecast and actually keep things on the shelf. And I'm not talking about just some things on the shelf. I'm talking everything on the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
It takes an amazing just amount of foresight. And he's done just a killer job keeping us in the game. Mm-hmm. And with that, to your point, if we run out and people are gotten to that 6 touch point, then, you know, and we don't have inventory, they're going to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Is that gut feeling? Or I'm assuming you're probably a spreadsheet master.
Oh, you haven't seen the spreadsheets.
He's got massive skills.
Oh, my
gosh,
dude. Big times. Massive skills.
Yeah.
I like a spreadsheet.
I can tell. There's definitely, you can tell there's personality types that like, oh, that guy loves spreadsheets.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, it's, I do. I geek out on them. Mm-hmm. I do. Probably, again, there becomes a diminishing return. So I've tried to back off a little bit of how much analysis we do. Because there's just some things you just can't predict for.
Does it feel like a lot of it's gut feeling? I'm curious.
Yeah, I mean, here's what I always live by. Put the facts in first, then the emotion.
Okay.
And that's paid well for us, I think, over life, you know, over my life, just taking that mindset. Because a lot of times emotions will lie to you.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Numbers don't lie. And Dennis probably gets tired of hearing me say it, but I say that all the time, is the numbers don't lie. Right. And put that in first. And then the emotion's the tribal knowledge. Right.
Yeah.
It's the, like, you know what? Hey, I've been having this conversation with so-and-so. We've got this opportunity. That tribal knowledge then comes in on top of it. And so those two things, I think, work together well,
mm-hmm.
to get us in a pretty decent spot.
Yeah.
Yeah. The emotion part of it's the intangible, right? You can't touch, you can't look at it. You can't pull it, but it's, how much, I'm just curious, I'm getting nerdy here, but how much of that process is emotional, like a feel for it, and then the numbers? Like if you had to put them into percentages in predicting,
I'd say 75-25.
Numbers, 25 feel for it.
Yeah, 75% numbers, 25% feel. Okay.
That's interesting.
I'm glad I'm not running that part.
Yeah.
So I mean, I've got more of the, you know, my mind's creative and... Mm-hmm. Emotions.
Yeah,
you know?
That's how I am.
And the numbers piss me off sometimes. I'll be honest with you. They do. But
last week.
They've never made sense to me.
But that's why I think that's why we balance well.
Yeah.
Because, mm-hmm. You know, we both can work off of our different skill sets, mm-hmm. and it's been successful.
It has. Yeah.
Really successful.
At one point, were you guys working other jobs? Are you full-time initial assistant?
I'm still working.
You're still working another job, yeah.
Joe, he's the only one with you know, enough guts to jump off the
deep end. I retired in March after 30 years. Yeah, I stepped down.
Congrats.
Thanks, man. It was an amazing run. It was interesting, though. I didn't think it would be hard saying goodbye, but it was. But then it wasn't very quickly, right? Mm-hmm. And it's been so nice just being able to pivot all my attention to here. And I don't know, I feel like home life's definitely better, mm-hmm. for sure. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it allows me to focus more and do more things like that we're doing with Initial Ascent. So it's good.
Gotcha. You have a facility up there? Are you still in the same place? Is it grown? Are you more employees, I would assume, more assembly?
If you looked at it from the outside, you'd see the seams like pulsing every once in a while.
Yeah, it is busting at the seams. So we're starting to look for another facility.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's, you know, we're in that facility till November of 26. So okay. We've got a little bit of time. So we're going to make it work. I mean, it's funny because we have, you know, the podcast now. Mm-hmm. But that is a catch-all room. It's the podcast room. It's the photography room. We office out of there some. So, I mean, it just is everything. So it's a rotating office of stuff. But we've got a couple. So since we were here last time, we have two new employees since then. So we've got Chase, who we brought on full-time. He's kind of our marketing manager. We've had Cody. He's our warehouse guy. He's awesome. And then we just recently brought on a guy by the name of Wyatt.
Gotcha.
Which he's doing a fantastic job. So we got an amazing crew.
Yeah, that's cool. It's fun to see it grow, huh?
Yeah,
that has to be super, super satisfying, I would think. Just to take an idea, and then now you're, you know, producing, selling packs. You're probably getting feedback from the consumer. You probably get pictures and photos.
Oh, man, the best part.
Testimonials. That's one of my very favorite parts of this job. It's just like testimonials and hearing people that have, you know, drawn a tag and gone out and had an adventure that they might have not otherwise had. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I can imagine that's super satisfying.
It is. Yeah, it's been a great journey.
Mm-hmm. What's your, switch to packs a little bit. What's your favorite pack that you guys make?
5K for me. That's, I run that probably 95% of the time. 5K with the meat shelf so I can go day pack mode. Because if it's spring bear, if it's early season, I'm always going to pull the bag off and run the lid with the meat shelf in a day pack. I would say 5K for me.
Yeah, I'm typically running the 8K. Listen to this guy too much.
It's my goal. I told you guys last time. I'm trying to make the 8K the most popular pack we sell here at Gohan.
I'm telling you.
Slowly getting there.
I can shrink that sucker down. Yeah. You know, and it only weighs just a little bit more than, say, the 3K or the 5K. And so, yeah, it stays on my pack.
You're pretty disciplined about not adding things that you don't need necessarily because you got the room, right? Might as well throw the kitchen sink in there too.
You know, it's taken some time, Trail. It really has taken some time to get that discipline. But I used to be, if I had the room, I would fill it.
Yeah.
For sure.
That is one downside of a bigger pack.
Yeah.
A lot of gear in there.
Yeah, I think it's more of a problem of, maybe people, they have the what ifs. Right. Mm-hmm. They maybe don't have enough experience to know what they're most likely to face. Mm-hmm. And they get the what ifs, like, what if this happens? Yeah. What if I get cold? Yeah. What if, you know, what if I'm hungry, you know, and they'll add a bunch of extra stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's, it can get dicey. How many days can you do? Do you backpack out of your 5K?
I do.
What would you say it's ideally sized for in terms of like duration of a hunt?
5 to 7 for that one.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you could stretch it more if you needed to, especially early season. But I'd say that's ideal, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 days, be perfect out of it.
Gotcha. And then day mode, that's just your kick around, you cow elk hunting.
Yeah. I mean, it's, guys that are running from a truck, that's a perfect option for them on that. But I really like it once we get set up with camp and then take the bag totally off. Cause a lot of times, I mean, especially like I said, like bear season, I don't need a lot of gear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's late season, different story, keep the bag on. But day pack, just being, you know, close to 4 pounds and you've got everything you need, it's great.
Is your day pack, you're talking meat shelf and top lid, right? Yep. The bigger top lid.
Exactly.
Which is a pretty slick combo.
Yeah. And it just sits there, right? Because that meat shelf's behind there already. Mm-hmm. So we like it.
Yeah, I must say it's a slick little system.
If you add that Cub accessory bag onto that, it gives you an extra 700 cubic inches. Mm-hmm. So even when you get into late season, you can still take those layers with you. And I've been using that Cub quite a bit in the last couple of years. Just putting I actually put a 1-inch pad in the bottom of it, and it stays there all the time. And so I'll take and put puffy pants if I'm not wearing puffy pants, or I'll put my rain gear in there, and then I use it for a seat. So a glass and pad, it works great
just to sit on.
Yep.
What's your favorite accessory for the backpack?
Has to be, I'd say, the pannier.
Yeah, the pannier for sure.
Yeah. It's most useful. Never leaves our frame.
Yeah. Second favorite, and I gotta just make a plug on this one, we got a brand new water bottle that is sick.
Oh, really? The holder.
Yeah, which we're gonna show you guys later today, but we're sold out of the other one, so we're bringing the new one out today.
Yep.
So yeah, it's really nice.
How could you enhance off the other one? The other one worked really well too. So.
Yeah. Oh. This one's,
I think you guys will
wheels
like
are
it.
Turning in my head right now.
Oh yeah, you're gonna really like it.
I was thinking as I was doing my podcast the other day, I think I said on it, if I had a nickel or a quarter for every time I was with somebody when they were like, hey, how do I use my load shelf? And that was like the first time as they've ever tried to use it, as we were pulling off quarters, you know. It's super common.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys find that? I hear from people all the time, and I've been with so many people that it's like, hey, how do I use my load shelf? Is your guys' is fairly intuitive, like pretty easy to use, would you say?
Yeah, I would say it's very simple. I mean, there's like three things that we really focus on. One, heavy loads more comfortably. That's first and foremost. But then the simplicity of our system. Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, Trail, it's literally you undo your shoulder straps, pull the bag, unclip your bag, pull it back. There's your meat shelf.
Mm-hmm.
It goes into six buckles on the side, two up top. So you put your meat on, and then your bag clips into the orange. I mean, it's, I would guess, less than 2 minutes to load a quarter and go.
Yeah, easily.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so that was one of the main things that when we were doing a lot of research early on, because let's face it, when it happens, the weather's usually cruddy, right? Mm-hmm. It's late at night. You're tired.
It's the last thing you want to
do. Yeah. Right. Yeah. The last thing you do is try to think, okay, where do I get this strap? Where does that strap go?
Yeah.
And we heard that over and over and over, and we experienced it too, just with all the different packs. So it was like, we have to make something that's super simple.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually color-coded the bar tacks, trying to make it even more simple. We looked to the tent industry because they're really good at color code management. Mm-hmm. So we said, well, let's do that. So we did that, and lo and behold, it works really good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with all these changes, that you try to make over the years, and you try to make your pack better, and you just try to raise the bar and just, make it more usable. I think that's the one thing that will always stay around.
Yep.
Like color coding, man.
Color coding, bar
tests. Yeah, it's the details, right? It's the small things.
Yeah, but we try to educate people. With our YouTube channel, we send with every pack, we have a note, a handwritten note that you get, and it has a QR code down at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll not only take you to the YouTube channel, but that takes you to the fitting page. So we show them immediately how to fit the pack properly right out of the box.
Mm-hmm.
But then while they're there, they can learn about these other things, especially, we spend a lot of time talking about the pannier and talking about loading meat.
Mm-hmm.
So I think education, really helps, but the fact that it's so simple is just a really big help for our consumer.
Mm-hmm. It's funny when I was hearing you talk, like when you say it's the last thing that you want to be thinking about, I'm always curious because I think the common emotion that most people feel when they kill an animal, I'm always shocked. It's like, yeah, I feel that exactly. And I've killed an elk, and then to break down an elk by yourself is this like daunting task. It takes you so much time to like get all the meat off, get it organized. There's this like almost a panic that sets in for me where I'm just like,
I've got to think now.
The pain train is about to commence. It's this daunting task. And there is always this like level of frustration. If it's like, I don't know exactly how to get that all loaded and situated and ready to go. It's almost this like little panic that sets in me. And I'm like,
Do you even go further than that and think about the route back?
Oh yeah. Oh, for sure.
That's the thing that overtakes me.
Yeah, me too.
I'm like breaking down the animal. Okay. I've done that 100 times. I can do that with my eyes closed. But golly, I've got this route back. Mm-hmm. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. You sit there. It's just like a little stressful situation as you're breaking down the animal. Yeah. I mean, I killed a bull a few years ago and I was 9 miles in by my, like, you know, I sent Neville and his brother off to go hunting, but I was thinking, man, that's an 18-mile round trip and I've got camp and I've got an elk and I'm like doing the math on the amount of miles. And I'm like, oh, I think minimum, I'm probably 2 days and probably three, you know, and it's a lot of work.
It is
so much work.
That's why it's great to be a mule deer hunter. You try to decide, do I want to do it all at once, which I could, or do I want to do it twice and leapfrog some things? And it's like, I'll just throw it all in.
Yeah, that's
Cape meat, camp.
That's it.
Hiker out, one load.
You need to kill bigger bugs.
Like I kill them before they get too rutted up, because then they're going heavier.
There you go. One thing that jumped out to me, you keep saying carries a heavy load more comfortably. What do you think? What design features of a pack help you carry a lot of weight more comfortably?
Ooh. That's a really good question. I think my perspective, at least our frame, right? We spend a lot of time really figuring out the right angle of the frame to drive that weight into your power source, your hips.
Okay.
And then it was a lot. So once we kind of had the shape figured out, and we worked closely with the engineer on that, then it was the reinforcements that went into it, right? Where do we need to reinforce this to give it structure, to give it stability? But then also, how do we design it so it has flex? Mm-hmm. So you got torsion flex, so it doesn't feel like a board on your back, right? So I think all of those things went into our frame design, making sure that it did what we wanted, allow you to carry the heavy loads more comfortably. And then once we started testing it to confirm that, right? So to me, I think it was, those were the main things from my perspective. I don't know if you have a different opinion on it.
No, I'll just add on to that. That's exactly where it started. And that's the foundation of how we can carry these heavy loads more comfortably. And just adding on to that, we were changing things by the half a degree in the bend of to get it just right. Our engineer was saying, well, let's go to, you know, this degree this time and let's test it. So we went back and forth off, you know, off of different degree levels. And we finally found the one that we felt with a load drove it right where it was supposed to through our hips and down into our quads. And so I think that's where it started. But then, I know for me personally, that lumbar area had to be right, and it had to be more cushioned than anything I'd ever put on, because my lower back issue, it's a real thing. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, with padding, one secret there is surface area. Mm. You have to increase that surface area. Now, you can't get too crazy with it, but that surface area has to be maximized in order to spread weight over, you know, because if you can increase surface area, then you spread weight over a greater portion, right? Mm-hmm. So per square inch, you have less weight.
That makes sense.
Okay. And so with that lumbar area, we wanted that super padded up. So that's how we came up with the dual lumbar padding.
Densities of foam.
Yes, we have, and Joe was able to find the foam out of the furniture industry, actually. And, so we took that and, you know, we have a piece of foam that is closed cell. So it's pretty high density foam. Mm-hmm. And then we have a bigger piece of foam that is open cell. And so that forms that kind of that pillow top. And, you know, once you get a heavy load on, or once you tighten that hip belt to where you kind of move through or condense that open cell, then you hit the closed cell, which is still very, very comfortable. A lot of times, you know, in the past, I would have a pack that didn't have a very substantial lumbar area, and it would basically have closed cell foam. And once you move through that, it was nothing. Mm-hmm. And it was very, very uncomfortable for me personally. Mm-hmm. And so, so Joe and I really concentrated on that hip belt padding, and finding that foam, I think, was a big, big thing.
Mm-hmm. So hip belt and lumbar. Do you shoulder harness, same type of foam? I mean, how do you address it?
Yeah. And back to Dennis's point, one of the things, I mean, Dennis always is driving, testing. I remember at one point, I don't know how many different types of foam we had on the table, but it was a lot. And I remember
you tested them out for a mattress.
Well, we did actually literally go as far as testing mattress foam.
We just bought a new mattress at my house, so it's fresh on my mind.
We need to talk about that.
I don't know how you buy a mattress. We should get there at the end. But I honestly have no idea how you buy a mattress because you go into a mattress store and you like lay on it for a second, right. And you're like, oh, that feels okay. That one feels all right. And you're like, I don't know though. I've never slept in it.
Yep. How do you know? Overnight.
Huh?
Do they allow you to sleep overnight?
Most of them will give you 90 days or something like that at your house. But who wants to go through that?
Exactly. Yeah,
to ship it back and deal with that?
No, exactly.
Yeah. But no. I was going to, I remember Joe and I, we would go and buy like yoga pads.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that foam that they were using there, and oh gosh, we cut up a lot of pads just trying different things.
Yeah, and we had foam from everywhere we could possibly find trying it out. But we knew that was one of the things that we heard over and over. You know, there's certain packs out there, certain manufacturers are like, oh, their foam's, you know, way too soft. Mm-hmm. And we even experienced it with some, you know, packs that we had. So ultimately, yeah, it was like, we're going to try every type of foam imaginable. And ultimately we found out there was two different types that we really, really liked.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Did you guys play with like the position of your load shelf as far as like where to place the bulk of the weight? And what have you found as far as?
It doesn't matter what pack you're using. If that weight is too low,
You're in for
it will kill you.
A bad day.
and most people don't know why that is, but like we did it with ours. We, you know, I was right there in my garage and I took 50 pounds, put it where it was supposed to be, you know, did my thing, and then took that same 50 pounds, moved it down 4 inches, you know, on purpose. Mm-hmm. And what it did is it dropped where that load went through my hips. It missed my hips, went through my sacral region, which is not a fun thing, and completely missed the powerhouse, you know. And so, you know, I think you see a lot of people that are carrying that weight, that heavy weight, they let it get way too low.
Yeah.
And it's just physics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think for me, it's got to be up above my hips.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know what the distance is. It'd be interesting to actually play with the different heights, right? To see, is it 4 inches, 3 inches? What is it exactly that carries the best? I can't say that I've ever done that.
A good rule of thumb is no lower than the top of that hip belt. That's okay. That's a good rule of thumb.
The top of your hip belt.
Yep.
The bottom.
The top.
The top. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. It really opens up your hips, right? It allows you to like stride out and get the weight up.
Yeah, and if you actually, we went a step, I think, even further with our bag design. If you flipped our bags, next time you guys just flip one inside out and look at it, it's literally a V shape intentionally, and then on the sides, it's a wedge shape. So we wanted to kind of drive the message of what we're doing with the meat shelf to carry that load up. But we also want you to carry your pack higher. Mm-hmm. So you've got this V shape, so you put the soft in the bottom and then the heavy in the middle. Having that V versus a lot of packs, they're just a tube. Well, a tube, things just tend to fall. So we wanted to wedge it from the side and create the V, and it does. It helps keep that load up a little bit higher as well on your back.
Yeah, great point.
Go ahead.
Go for it.
No, I saw you leaning into the mic, and I was side eye. I caught you. Go ahead.
Do you guys know right away you want to do carbon fiber on the frame? Because like not a lot. When you guys started doing that,
carbon fiber had a bad rap.
Yeah. And like, how do you like go and educate people like that this is the system, you know?
Yeah. I mean, when we started, we white sheeted it with all of the things that we wanted out of the pack. We didn't have a predetermined idea that it had to be carbon, but we quickly kind of got there that it was like, to do all these things, this seems to be the best.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember the second engine, because we worked three different engineering firms as we were going through this, but the second engineering firm, we sat down with them, we went through a whole nother white sheet process. And again, we threw every type of material, including balsam wood up on there, wasn't it? If I remember right. Out there, known to man. And it came back to, for what we wanted, it was like, if we can get carbon to hold up the way we think it can, it's the most versatile.
Yeah. And we started with that, and then it evolved from there, using not only carbon, but mm-hmm. some composite material as well. And we found that, you know, was what gave us, you know, that flex, you know, along with the resin that we were, mm-hmm. that we had discovered. But carbon fiber, I mean, we've all seen, you know, the failures of that in certain instances. And, you know, we knew we couldn't just use carbon fiber. So that's where those composite materials came in. And that really, that changed it for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. Were you, I'm trying to remember, were you the, because I know Kuyu did carbon fiber.
Yeah.
Were you the kind of the second to be using carbon fiber?
I'm maybe in the hunting space.
I think in the hunting space.
Kuyu was definitely out. Yep. They were the pioneers, I would say, with it. I mean, rewind the clock way back when. I think even Dana Designs did some stuff way mm-hmm. back when. But I think Kuyu really set that bar mm-hmm. at a new level. Kudos to them for what they did.
Aesthetically, too. Oh, I mean, boy, they look sharp.
No question. But then it was like, okay, how do we take it to that next level?
Sure.
Once we got there. So I think we were kind of second one of the game on that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it just made me think, because I know the Kuyu packs initially. I don't know. I haven't owned a Kuyu pack in a while, but I know initially they had some issues with your load lifters snapping. And
yeah, the top part would snap a lot.
Yeah, it just reminded me when you said it didn't have a great name, because I remember a lot of people had complaints about the way that frame functioned. And like I said, I haven't owned one since, so I don't know what they're doing now. But I remember the first time I saw your guys' frame, thinking, oh, it's interesting, it's carbon fiber, but it's not carbon fiber like Kuyu carbon fiber. It's mm-hmm. different. This is different. Mm-hmm. It's definitely beefier, heavier duty. I think I told you last time we were here, we used it for a cutting board.
Right.
Yeah. When I was in Alaska, we cut up some moose back straps and ate that. But yeah, I remember thinking, this is a different thing. Like, this is carbon, but it's not carbon like I've known carbon.
Yeah.
You know, earlier. What mistakes do you guys think people make when they're getting fit for a pack? Because as I did my podcast the other day, I thought, man, when is the last time I actually made an adjustment to my mm-hmm. backpack? Like, I probably haven't changed that thing since I got it out of the box and put it on for the first time, right?
You know, probably put it on empty, right?
Yeah. Yeah, probably put it on empty, probably fit it to me that way. Mm-hmm. And then, like I said, I haven't looked at making any changes to it. You know, I've definitely put some LBs on over the year. So I got to thinking about that the other day. Man, I wonder how my pack's going to fit, you know? But what mistakes do you guys think people make when getting fit for a pack?
Yeah, I think, first of all, Joe and I have fit so many people over the years. Yeah. It's been a lot of fun. We enjoy each and every time, but...
Is it like fitting somebody for a boot? You're like, oh, man.
It can get interesting.
I bet.
Because, you know what, probably 80 to 90% of the time, those dudes are just grabbing the pack and there's, you know, they do the whole twirl over the head thing. Have you seen that?
God, I can never so do crazy. That.
I can't either. My shoulders.
Yeah, watch people do that. And I'm like, how do you
crossing
do
their hands or something
yes.
weird?
Yes.
And then they flip it goes it. Up.
Normal. Yeah.
It's like the arrow twirl. I can't figure that out either.
I'm right.
Like, you guys look so cool doing that, but I can't figure it out.
One day.
One day. Yeah,
one day. But 80 to 90% of the guys do not know the proper way to put on a pack. So, I mean, what do you think, Joe? I mean, what's the number one thing that you see?
Well, you're spot on though, man, right? Most people, and it surprised you, even people that you're like, that's a pretty well-known hunter.
So that's interesting. How do you properly put on a pack?
Yeah, I think, you know, so you hit the nail on the head, right? You got to have weight in it to start, mm-hmm. right? We always tell people put weight in it. And then we kind of start from the bottom and work our way up, meaning get the hip belt seated in the right spot. Dennis and I, you know, we can adjust our torso length on the frame pretty quickly. And it's gotten to the point now where we can look at somebody like, oh, he's 5'10", he's 5'11", he's 6'1".
Yeah.
You know, we can tell really quick.
Or his torso length's 18, his torso length's 22. Yeah.
So we can make those adjustments really quickly. And I would say we probably get that 95% of the time right. Hmm. So we get the torso length, but when we actually fit them after we've done all of that, we start at the hip belt. And we get it kind of, you know, we start as a rule of thumb, put the hip belt pad, the wings, on that center bone, your hip bone, you know, that crest. Put that right there on the center of the pad, and then we have them tighten that down first there, kind of in an athletic stance. And then we work up to the shoulder straps. And Dennis was really good. I didn't catch this at first when we were doing it, but I noticed that, you know, Dennis would kind of walk his shoulders down and pull back. And then we started implementing that as we're talking to people versus just whoop, taking it back. If you walk it down, it kind of settles in there better, and it kind of brings that shoulder strap around. So then we do sternum, and we tell them, don't do it where you just rip it across, because then you pull your shoulder straps. Just straight line. We want a tight, straight line, keep it in the shoulder pockets. And as they kind of stand up, load lifters last. And again, what we see a lot of people is they'll just grab those, and they pull them all the way down. So we tell them, just bring until that frame comes in up part of your back. So for us, a rule of thumb is once we do all of that, then we kind of go up to the shoulder and we kind of put our finger underneath the shoulder pad. If we get friction under there, but we can get it, and it tells us we got roughly right 80% on the hips. And that's what we're kind of driving towards on that. Good. So if you follow that process, it seems to work really well. And then Dennis is really good at teaching people reverse it. When you back out of it, unlift your load lifters, do your sternum, loosen your shoulders, do your belt. Because when you come back to get that pack on, life has changed, right? Mm-hmm. So you're not going to be where you're at, even if it's 5 minutes later. Go through that same process. Make sure you get the right fit.
How often do you do that, taking the pack off?
I don't. I just use it. It's usually this.
This and
clip,
that.
Yeah. And the waist clip, belt. Yeah. Dump.
But it makes sense then, because you're always then sitting down. What would be the proper way to get your pack on your body when you got 100 pounds in?
Yeah, that's what I was curious. How do you do that?
Do you, like...
Best you can.
Yeah, like, every time I try to sit down, I try to find a nice place to sit down so I know I can get up easy with the heavy pack. Like, if I have 100 pounds on coming out, or if I have 60 pounds going in, I'm like, oh, find a nice little slope so I can sit down so it's right there so I can easily roll over like a turtle and then go up that way. Like, I really hate when people try to come up behind me and try to grab my pack and, like, lift it up for me. Like, then it feels just weird. I don't get things right, but I don't know. What's the best way, you think, to get up without hurting yourself?
Yeah,
I think heavy pack on?
If I've got a couple of people, you know, that can actually lift it
Lift it up without, because, like, normally they're lifting
and
it up and it's,
yeah, and then just hold it there while I get everything, you know, at least somewhat tight to where I can, you know, hold it myself. That's always the easiest way. Mm-hmm. But how many times is that going to happen?
Yeah.
So I'm like you. I try to find a little bit of a slope and set it up right, get up underneath it.
And are you waist belting first?
I'm waist belting it. Yeah. Or, I mean, sometimes you can't waist belt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because
so,
the angle.
Yeah. So if you can't waist belt it, then I'm just getting those shoulder straps as tight as I can and then tightening those load lifters, turtling and getting up. But I've had some wrecks that way too. And I got to be careful with my back. I've got to be careful doing that. So I try to, I don't know, I just try to take some care and try to do it as slow as I can until that moment where you can't do it slow.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You have to go.
Yeah. You got to go. But
yeah, I've had some moments where I did the turtle thing and either roll like over rotated and then kind of went down. Yeah. I'm always amazed. I'm like, I can't physically lift this thing and get it up on my shoulder, but yet I'm going to pack the whole thing out. Right. Like when I actually,
isn't that something?
It is amazing.
Like, but that tells you how, you know, good of a pack you're using.
And yeah.
When it's functioning properly. That's what you can do.
It always blows my mind. I'm like, I can't physically lift this thing, but yet once I get it to my back and I get my thighs underneath me, you know, it's doable. I'm always like, I can't lift it, but I can hike out with it once I get it loaded.
That's one trick we always do with people that try on packs at shows or whatever, even if it's only 50 pounds, we'll have them put it on, they'll walk around with it, and then they'll go to take it off, and then we'll have them hold it.
Mm-hmm.
And it just blows their mind.
Yeah.
Just like, that was on my back? No.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. But yeah, I would say one mistake that I see guys doing is not tightening that hip belt enough. and they let too much weight get into their shoulders, and then they try to compensate by tightening those load lifters. But if your hip belt's not tight enough, and it's if it's sagging down a little bit, you're not those load lifters aren't going to do you any good other than just stabilize the load. They're not going to actually lift it off the tops of those shoulders. So I think that's one of the things that I see when I'm trying guys on, if they don't tighten it down. And Joe made a comment that, you know, we see some really successful hunters. We had one just not too long ago that put it on, and he could twist and his hip belt would stay in the same place. I mean, it was not tight at all. It was just every bit of it was on his shoulders. And I'm like, man, you know, I know what you know what you're doing and you're very tough, but there's a better way to do that. So
yeah, he's just being propelled by mental fortitude at that point, right? Yeah.
That usually gets me. Oh man.
Yeah. Do you guys make just one height of frame? Or do you do multiple heights of frames?
So we have two. So we have the Intricus frame, which is what we founded it with. That's really, I would say, 95% of our sales are that frame.
And how tall is it?
That goes up to like a 20... It's
25 and a half.
25 and a half inches. That, the whole the frame length. For torso, though, you're probably at about a what? A 21?
22.
Yep. On that frame. And then we have the Invictus frame, which we launched that several years later. And that's geared towards more towards females and youth. And that'll go up to about a 17, right? And then down from there. So, which is one of the things, I mean, when we, at the expo every year, we'd have women year after year coming in there and you could just see the disappointment on their face, right? Because they would buy a pack or they had a pack. A lot of times the boyfriend gave them the pack or the husband gave them the pack and it sits all the way up here. So they would just be miserable out there. And that's why I think a lot of women back out of hunting. But when we launched that in, was it 2020?
I think so. Yeah.
The expressions on women's faces was priceless. We literally had a woman last year at the expo or this year at the expo. She came in, I would say she's mid 20s, very, very fit. You know, she was hanging out at Born Primitive and she looked like that style, you know, super fit. And she came in, she tried it, left, came back, talked about it some more with her boyfriend, came back the next day and she's like, I want to get this pack. So I'm literally sitting there building this pack up for her, going through it, and I look, and she's literally crying. I kid you not. And remember, I pulled you aside and told you about this. And I'm like, what's, is everything all right? She's like, I've been looking for years for a pack to actually fit me. I'm getting goosebumps thinking that's about cool. it.
Me too.
Yeah. And it was, I mean, that was pretty freaking awesome.
Yeah, that's cool.
Did I tell you what happened after that? I don't know. Like 10 minutes later, I was still just kind of taken back by that story and goosebumps, you know, just, it was just awesome. I mean, that's one reason why we're doing what we're doing. Well, what I didn't know is that same gal came over and brought another gal. And I was, this gal was talking to me and I told her the story, the most awesome story that I've heard in a long time, you know, about the gal that finally found her pack that fit her and that she was just bawling. She said, that was me. I'm like, oh, nice to meet you. But yeah, what a cool deal.
What a cool, I mean, it's cool.
Yeah, it's that's really awesome. Cool. What's your favorite, like your most memorable hunt or most memorable, like your best memory using one of your own packs? There had to be a moment where you're out there and you're like, man.
You go first.
Well, I think, and this wasn't even packing my animal out yet. I think it was our first time ever to New Zealand. And Joe shot his stag. And we had basically left all of our packs at the house. And we brought two prototypes. And it was the first time that our frame ever packed out an animal. And so I think, and Joe got to pack it out, and that right there is still that is just ingrained in my brain.
Yeah, like you guys created it. All the blood, sweat, and tears went into it.
Yeah, and then the scenery. I mean, we couldn't have done it. No, not since then. I went back though, in my mind, listening to your podcast.
Yes.
Yeah, it was such a cool place.
One of the New Zealanders that went with us, Monty, he reached out yesterday and he was watching. Did he send you that?
Yeah, he was watching
Lord of the Rings. Yeah. Just sent me a clip of it because we watched some of that while we were waiting at rainstorms when we were back there. But yeah, I was telling him, man, I've done a lot of hunts. I've been fortunate to go a number of places, but I don't think any place I've ever been is like really set in my mind and just the way that that scenery and the way that that country made me feel. It just really resonated. It got into me bad. And like, I want to go back way more than I thought I would.
Yeah. Can we work remote?
Yeah. Move to New Zealand. Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah. Just for, 5 months out of the year.
It's so funny. Monty yesterday was like, yeah, I haven't been out hunting lately. And it's just so different, right? Like he can go whenever he's got some days off, he can take off for a backpacking trip and go hunting, but
365 days a year.
Yeah. Man, incredible scenery though.
It's spectacular.
Yeah.
The most beautiful place I've ever been.
We should all go back group trip.
Oh, there you go. I like what you're talking about.
Yes.
Scheming. How about you? You got anything different?
I mean, that was definitely a stellar moment, top of the list, but I think about probably one of my all time favorite hunts. We were still testing packs. Was Dennis's elk that we hunted up in unit 45. He drew a tag and was one of 25 tags, if I remember right, archery. And this was not an easy hunt to get to. It was up on Bennett Mountain, so mostly private. And the only way to get it is on the south facing, which is an insanely brutal hike in. And there's no water to speak of up there, to speak of. So we went in several times before. We packed in water, a ton of water. And then we got into the elk. So the day before the season started, we were up there and we had an elk just thrashing right behind us. And it was just like, man, this just sets the stage for a great hunt. I mean, it was just awesome. And it continued over the next day and we had several opportunities. And then when Dennis, connected on that one, my son actually came up, my oldest boy. So he got to be a part of it. And, that was our first elk hunt that we actually packed an animal. Now we were beyond just testing a frame. We were testing our bags, our pannier, everything. And I've visualized this picture that's in my head, where it's Dennis, he's got giant quarter on and then I'm behind him. And my son took the picture and it was a colorway that we didn't come out with.
Mm-hmm.
It's still my youngest son's favorite colorway. It's kind of a greenish sagey with coyote mixture that we did. And it has Dennis and I packing out his elk. And I would say that was probably one of the most epic ones too. It was like, yep, this is legit. It's going
to
work.
Yeah. Sounds like you need to bring that back for your 10th anniversary, right?
Ooh, a little retro.
A little two-tone colorway. I love that.
Yeah. I've kind of gotten fond of some of our prototype colors too.
Sure.
Sometimes we just get a random color. And
the two-tone.
Yeah.
That's all. You guys got plans this year for hunts?
Yeah. Yeah. It's my plan every year is to hunt at least one more day than I did the year before.
Is that legit, like a goal? Do you track it?
Legit a goal, yeah.
Okay, that's awesome.
Well, it's just because, I mean, this season of my life, my kids, now they're all but one out of the house. And, with having, I've still got two businesses and, it's just time. We got into this thing, so we could maybe hunt some more, right?
Passion project.
And that wasn't the case, or hasn't quite been the case. But now, we're getting a little bit bigger. We've got some employees that we can trust. We can actually
step away
for a little bit. So that's a realistic goal for me. So I've got I've got a general September elk hunt with a guy that I went with last year in this place, and there's some retribution. I gotta get some pull one over on you. Oh man, I gotta get something done. So that's gonna happen. And then I drew a antelope tag in Wyoming.
Nice.
Yeah. And then be hunting Missouri whitetail this year, and then a late season mule deer tag in Idaho. And then gotcha. We're going to be in Mexico in January. So,
yeah. Oh, you're going to go down there and hunt deer?
Yeah.
Okay, right on. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's so, fun. So. How's the pressure in Idaho as far as, because I know that we recently Ooh. Saw.
It's hot. The pressure is hot.
Is man. It?
Oh, yeah. It's steaming.
Do you feel like there's more than you would like? I'm just curious.
Oh, really. Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. especially when you've got, I hate to say this, but I mean, you've got fish and game when you go to check in an animal, you know, and they're telling, oh, yeah, there was two more bears came out of, you know, that creek this week. And, you mm-hmm. know, and, oh, you know where a good place is.
Right.
And so it's just, yeah, it's gotten tougher. But gotcha. I think it's getting that way everywhere, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I was just curious. I know that, you know, Idaho had the first change. Come, first serve, yeah. essentially. And it looks like this next year they're going to a draw, which yeah. I've heard both sides. I think we've had the debate. Brady didn't like the change.
Don't like the change. Could have done one more thing first before he went to this.
Yeah. I'm kind of agree with you. Yeah.
Yep.
I'm kind of in favor of it, just in the fact that it felt like a draw anyway for most people. And I feel like at least now, you know, everybody can kind of apply. Mm-hmm. I did like the fact that, like I said, that there's not going to be any app fee, which I think is cool. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I was just curious as to, you know, what Idaho, the kind of the direction of Idaho and what the pressure feels like, and if it feels like it's getting squeezed or.
I'd say it feels very real. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you can't fault folks, right?
Sure.
You're just doing it. And I think, you know, with all of the different avenues today of getting the narrative out, podcasts, you know, YouTube, mm-hmm. all of those things certainly educated everybody, and hey, good on them for getting out after it. Just, I think we're like, it's a little tight though.
Sure.
It's a little tight.
Yeah.
Is there a lot of people moving in that you guys are seeing from out of state, like becoming residents? And
Boise still blowing up?
Blowing up.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's crazy. I think they can't remember the exact number they projected, but it was by like 2035, I think. The Treasure Valley was estimated to be over 3 million.
Mm.
That's crazy.
Which that's about double from where we're at now.
Yeah.
No kidding.
This last week, I'm talking to my mom. She lives in Florida. That's where I'm from originally. And I'm talking to her, and she's retired, and I think she was watching Fox News or something. But she was like, oh, look, Boise is the second most popular place to move to.
Mm. 10 years running.
Yeah. So, yeah, they're still flying that flag.
You're like, tell your friends.
No, we're old.
No, not so much.
That's right.
Yeah. That's how Utah. Utah's the same. I mean, yeah, you drive. St. George is just absolutely blown up since I went to college there, and you know, 20 some odd years ago. But yeah, from where it is now to then is not even hardly recognizable, and that's just in, you know, my life, my adult life. But
the whole Wasatch Front.
Yeah, the Wasatch Front is just crazy. All the way from what, Payson maybe to Ogden now at this point. It's just like one contiguous block of people.
Yep.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, blowing up. What else you got, B-Mills?
How often do you suggest people wash their backpack?
That's a great question.
Best way to go about that.
When you can't stand the smell anymore.
Yeah. And do you not wash certain things, or you just wash the whole thing, just drop it in, clean everything?
That's a great question. We put a video out on this probably 6-8 months ago because we get this question a lot. And I think, you know, one, we would recommend just, you know, doing it in cold water to start with. And let it soak in, right? Do a mild detergent if you have to, unscented, but just let it soak and kind of knead it, right? We also recommend turning the product inside out if you're going to throw it in the washing machine. So, and buckle everything so that the buckles aren't just flinging around everywhere.
So you could put it in the washing machine. I've never done that part of it.
You could, yeah, on a delicate cycle. And then, you know, with the hip belt, a little bit more difficult. But it can be done. Our pads are removable. You can actually remove our pads out. So if you wanted to, right, because let's face it, you get a lot of blood that just drips down the back. All that webbing gets saturated with blood. And blood is pretty destructive on fabrics and materials. So,
really?
Mm-hmm. It'll rot it out over time.
It'll rot it out?
Yeah. Yep. So,
after you pack out an animal, how quickly do you wash your pack?
I don't think you have to worry about,
no. like,
you know,
It's not like going to be a month or two months or a year.
I don't know about that. Month or 2 to a year.
You don't have to do it within the hour.
Not that I know anything about that.
I was going to say, you know, maybe when you get home after about a week or something.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
So what will happen, though, if you wash your pack, anybody's pack, too much, if they have a DWR treatment on it, it'll wash itself out. Now, you can retreat them. Mm-hmm. You can absolutely do that. So we don't recommend just like every time you go, just wash. But if you've got blood soaked in there, probably best to get it. If you can't hose it off, you know, it's just in there, just soak it overnight. And then if that still doesn't work, then do a light cycle on the washing machine.
I take mine to the car wash and I hang it from one of the hooks and I just power blast it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I use the soap and the high pressure wash and just rinse that sucker out.
Probably does a good job.
It does. The hard part is that I'm always like, how am I going to get this thing home? So I got to take like a bucket or something to throw it in, you know? And then I'm always amazed because I feel like I've done a good job and I'll get home, pull it out of the bucket, and you look at the excess water that's in the bucket. And I'm like, it's still bloody.
There's still chunks
of meat in there. I'm like, I thought I had that thing whipped.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Yeah. Are you guys mostly putting your meat inside your bag? Are you doing between the bag and the frame?
I try to always use the bag and the frame. Mm-hmm. I always try to keep it out, but there definitely is time I have to throw it in.
Yeah.
I got a big old, you know, giant bear hide I got to shove somewhere and gets blood all over the place. And yeah.
Bag and frame. Between the bag and the frame. Yeah. Because I think if you put it in the bag, right, you end up with all the weight down at the base of the pack and it just doesn't carry as well.
Yeah.
That's my number one thing about a backpack. Like the position of the load shelf. Mm-hmm. If that thing sits at the base of my hips, like the base of the hip belt, it's a hard no for me. I can't do it. It just absolutely digs into my hips, torches my hip bone. I mean, I just can't do it.
That's why even some of the bags where they require you to like, oh, there's no shelf at all. It's just like where the bag and the frame meet together. That's where the meat's supposed to go. Like that's a no.
I've got
to
get it up above my hips. And typically the more secure, you know, the higher up, like not so high, but like you're saying, that makes a lot of sense to me when you said that, like top of the hip belt, right? That's where I typically like to get it and just the better experience for sure. Mm-hmm. And I'm the captain of the team that says no pack with 100 pounds in it is comfortable. I still don't think that any pack with 100 pounds is comfortable, but there are definitely packs that are more comfortable, more manageable.
Right.
Yeah. I think that's a big part of the puzzle is just completely the way that load shelf sits. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've never put on 100 pounds and was like, oh, sick. I love this.
That's why you don't do it during training in the summer.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. That's a no for me. Anything else? Yeah. Any other questions, burning questions you guys had? You had for these guys?
No, nothing I can think of.
I got one thing real quick.
Yeah.
Can we, we'll digress just a little bit.
Please.
All right. So I texted you guys the other day and said, I wanted to talk about movie theater.
What do you got?
Yeah. I almost forgot about that one.
I heard you were talking about, you went to the movie theater and for the first time in a little bit, right?
Yeah.
So I took my wife to the movie theater for the first time, probably a couple of years. And,
what'd you see, F1?
No, we saw Mission Impossible.
Okay.
Which, my anxiety levels cannot handle that. It's impossible.
Yeah.
That's why. Mm-hmm. Then that was the only one I've ever seen.
Okay.
I haven't. That was the first one I've ever seen. So I think that's the last one he's making. But they said it was perfect for a first time Mission Impossible watcher because 30 minutes of it was flashbacks and all that stuff. So you knew what was going on.
Right.
But I try to stay disciplined in what I eat.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I took a page out of Brady's book, and Brady says, you know, I want to get popcorn. I love popcorn, and to mix it with that, you know, with the chocolate, right? I think it was milk duds.
Milk duds and popcorn.
Yeah, so I did Whoppers the other day.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Which was a solid choice.
Yeah, I love Whoppers.
But guys, you got to help me out with this, and I'm 50 years old, and I haven't figured this out yet. How do you get there early to get your seat, you know, and all that? And you got this warm popcorn, the butter's flowing. Oh, yeah. How do you keep from eating it before the damn movie starts?
The movie starts and popcorn's done.
You get a large. It's free refills.
This is why I keep trying to push we need an intermission in movie theaters.
Most brilliant thing I've ever heard.
Pause it. Let us go resupply. Let's go to the bathroom.
More popcorn.
More popcorn.
Yeah, you have
more
to
that keep... fake butter, that not good for you.
You have
good.
To kill at least a half a buck up before the movie even starts. It's just mandatory. You have
to. I agree.
But so are not to. You're just sitting there eating it. Got previews playing.
And I feel like crap afterwards.
Oh, absolutely. Oh,
absolutely. But it was worth every bit of it.
That's why I only go once every 2 years.
Yeah, nothing will torch me like a bucket of popcorn and milk duds. Afterwards, feel like complete hell.
Bed sweats for sure.
Feel terrible.
Oh, yeah.
But you have to do it, right?
You have to. It's a
pretty the chairs they have nowadays at movie theaters, too? It's like, whoa, where are these things?
Yeah.
And my girlfriend was at one the other, like, I don't remember when, but like the like chairs would like vibrate and stuff. Like you'd feel like action like going on. Like,
oh, I'd fall asleep. If it was giving me a massage, well, I would definitely fall asleep.
Yeah.
Yeah. It gets dark. Yeah. I don't know. It hasn't revived my love of movies. Just going to the one, but maybe I'll get there again.
It was interesting because Tom Cruise, you know, came on before the movie and like talking to us.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. And he said, you know, thank you for coming to the movie. And this is how this was meant to be watched.
Interesting.
And from what I understand, I mean, the movies are kind of dying.
Yeah.
Everyone wants to watch them right here on your phone. Like, you can't get anything out of
it. It's all streaming type stuff. Yeah. My wife's cousin, we saw her at my son's wedding not too long ago, and she's actually a professional stunt woman, and she's worked in a lot of these action movies.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
That's cool.
It's the coolest thing.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And that's what she said. She said, the movies are dying. Mm-hmm. She said, I have worked, and she's very successful in that world. She says, I've worked 3 days this year.
Oh, wow. Dang.
Just nobody's making
movies.
Movies.
I bet in 5 years, I mean, AI will replace all that.
Yeah.
Scary.
Does that bum you out?
A little bit.
I think we were talking about it the other day, but I think just kind of the nature of the people that really like the outdoors and they like hunting, I think there's something tied to, I don't know, like that's reality for us. Like we want to experience it that way. And then when I watch something or I consume content, like I want it to be, I want to know that it's like legit, mm-hmm. you know, I want to know that person or they did the thing, you know, there's like that resonates with me, you know, I put myself there. Yeah. It'll bum me out. I think if we get to a point where we're seeing a bunch of generated AI content.
Yeah. It just doesn't do the same.
Man, you can't, you almost get to the point where you can't tell the difference, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think in the next 5 years you won't be able to,
which is pretty scary.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And yet full charge. Here we go.
Exactly. I want full charge.
No, it's not stopping.
No. But the cool thing is people are always going to want to buy a backpack and they're always going to want to go out and experience it because that's what keeps me getting out of bed every day.
Yep. Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
100%.
Yep. So that's awesome. Well, cool. We really appreciate you guys coming down.
Thanks so much.
So you can find your podcast on YouTube. You can find it on all the podcast platforms, right? Yep. It's called The Mountain Dude.
The Mountain Dude Podcast.
Yep. And then you guys got a place in Boise. People can stop in and try packs on and get fitted for a pack.
Yep.
We carry your packs.
Yep. Absolutely.
We've got your packs here. So anybody that's traveling through Vegas area, you guys can stop in and visit with Paul or Norris, we were talking about earlier, and get fitted for a pack, and those guys can line you out. But I'm stoked to go hunting. Talk about hunting gear always gets me fired up. I'm like, oh, let's go. I'm ready to go hunting. That's right,
exactly.
Yeah.
You're heading out this weekend. I got to go pull some trail cams.
Yeah, that's right.
Cool. I'm excited.
It's here.
Yeah, it's here. Well, thanks. We appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.